The unsurpassed, penetrating, and perfect truth is seldom met with, even in 100,000 myriad kalpas. Now we can see and hear it. We can remember and accept it. I vow to make the Buddha's truth one with myself. Homage to the Buddha, homage to the Dharma, homage to the Sangha. It's nice to have so many of us here today for our founder ceremony. I'm calling this talk the Founder's Vow because the invocation that we sang today is one of my favorites, and I'm going to base my talk on that invocation. Today, as our Master Man was saying, we celebrated the festival of our founder, Kato Chisan Kohu Zenji. When Reverend Master Jiyu established Shasta Abbey in 1970, she founded it in his name, which was a traditional way the Japanese would do something. Today we offer gratitude to him and to Reverend Master Jiyu, and renew our faith and our vow to practice. And let's see. Reverend Master Jiyu, as probably most of you know, met Kato Chisan in England when he was on a tour of the West, and he invited her to come back to Japan and be his personal disciple at Sojiji. And for those of you who've read The Wild White Goose, you know that it was not an easy time for her, but he really worked hard to make it possible for her to be there and to show his love and kindness to her, because he really wanted Soto Zen to be brought to the West by a Westerner. And he really promoted women in Buddhism. We're very lucky. We're very lucky for that. He died on November 1st, and so we usually try to have his ceremony as close to November 1st as possible. But we also put it at the end of our Hungry Ghost retreat, so this time it's a little bit early. Okay. So I thought I'd read, I know we just heard this invocation, but I thought I'd read it again and talk a bit about it. When Indra took a blade of grass and pointed towards the ground, from seeming nothing arose a place where training now resounds. This temple shapes a sacred space, magnificent in its reach, a deeper refuge of mindfulness, a place where all things teach. The Buddha holds each heart in faith. The Dharma pristinely shines. The Sangha lives in harmony. The three gems guide our minds. The holy life, the founder's vow, can never be any less. The precepts shape our every act. They pour out tenderness. The wish of every master's heart springs forth from disciples' hands. This vow is pure, a mandala. In strength and stillness it stands. The founder's vow is pure and still. It streams full from the source. Unborn, undying, to all it flows, unbounded in its course. The vow brings peace, it heals through joy, though pain and darkness may pall. The founder's vow awakens us. Our lives now answer this call, the call. To cleanse our hearts and stand upright with deep repentance true, we join together in gratitude to make this vow anew. So, what is the founder's vow? And what is the call? We're called to follow our hearts. And in the last, in the second to last verse, it says, The vow brings peace. It heals through joy, though pain and darkness may pall. Responding to this vow, to the calling of our hearts, is not necessarily easy. And because with the response and the longing is the facing of what may be difficult within ourselves and others. So we follow the longing of our hearts, no matter how difficult life may seem. I don't know why I'm so nervous today. You're such a wonderful group of people. Here I am talking about something that means a lot to me, but for some reason I'm nervous today, so you'll have to bear with me. Yesterday, we did the Feeding of the Hungry Ghost ceremony. And this is a really lovely ceremony because through all the music that we're singing and through the food that we put on the altar and the care that's taken with this ceremony, we're showing that no matter what a being has done, no matter how a person may feel about themselves, all is embraced within the great compassion of the unborn, however you want to call it. And at this ceremony, some of the most difficult karma of beings who are in the hungry ghost realms or in the hells or our own karma that we have, it's all completely embraced. Nothing is turned away from. So and the call to train is a willingness to see and embrace all aspects of ourselves, to trust in that great compassion. So sometimes you know, we all, different things help each of us with going on in our practice. Sometimes it's just hearing an invocation. It just touches our heart and helps us to keep on going, or just helps us to really want to do something about ourselves. During this ceremony, I was reminded of a ceremony that we have. It was actually when Reverend Vera knelt down to give Reverend Allard the offertory book, and she did it with such reverence. And what it reminded me of was when we'd have our New Year's ceremony here, when Reverend Master Gia was alive, and Reverend Dysewe was her chaplain, and he'd go and offer, probably was sparkling apple juice to all the monks in the front rows. And then he'd go to Reverend Master, and he'd kneel down, and he'd hand her, and she would take the wine glass from him, and then she would give it to him. And there was such reverence and gratitude, and it just even touches me today, that humility of just that simple movement. And I know when I was first here, I remember, you know, I think we all have our doubts and you know, is this training really valid and all that. And I remember seeing one of the monks, I was at a lay person, and the way he treated his kesa with such reverence, it said to me something like, this is real. You know, these people aren't just talking about something, they're really putting it into practice. And these simple acts can awaken something in us, because we all have Buddha nature, and we all have this longing to awaken to that, and to know the truth. And so when we see these simple acts, or hear an invocation, or hear a Dharma talk that touches us, or read something that is moving, it can really awaken that in us and renew our faith, and help us to keep on going. Because as we all know, it's there are the moments, as I think it was Suzuki Roshi, the little moments that make us dance. Sometimes there are those moments where you really sense that part of yourself that wants to train, and sometimes it's just kind of slogging along, and sometimes you're just feeling kind of blah, or you're feeling depressed or downright despairing, and something just awakens that within yourself, and you say, this is not the true reality. There is something more, and it helps us to keep on going. And and we all help each other. That's why coming to the monastery, for those of us who I would say are fortunate enough, most of you would not want to be fortunate enough to be in the monastery all the time, but for those of us who are fortunate enough, sometimes, you know, we might be feeling low, but someone else just says a kind word to us, or just does something with reverence, or just something helps us. And I've been reading this book called Kitchen Table Wisdom by Rachel Naomi Riemann, MD. Has anybody seen this book? It's Stories That Heal. And in this book, it's all these little stories about people touching on that place that is so important to all of us. And it's not per se Buddhist stories, but it's the same place that we all touch on. And I'm going to read you one of them that really touched my heart when I was reading it. It's called Healing is Mutual. One of my patients, now she's a doctor, but she also, I think she helps people with, she's kind of like a therapist too. One of my patients once defined a healer as someone who can see the movement towards wholeness in you more clearly than you can at any given moment. I remember flying to a medical conference with one of my colleagues. Between San Francisco and Boston, I healed him twice and he healed me three times. Frank is a middle-aged internist, the director of one of the medical clinics at a Midwestern inner-city hospital. For some time now, he has secretly thought about leaving medicine for something else, something more satisfying. Someone suggested that he try a physician's training program I teach before he made any big choices, and for the past 9 months, he has been reclaiming for himself that which is satisfying in his work. He tells a story about returning to his clinic after a weekend workshop on the power of intuition. His clinic is at a large teaching hospital. As faculty, part of his job is to see those patients who have no teaching value. Those who present a medical challenge or a diagnostic problem are saved for the younger doctors who are still in training. On this particular Monday afternoon, one of these patients, a Mrs. Gonzalez, was his regular 2 o'clock appointment. She was an elderly lady, maybe 80, in the last stages of breast cancer. No further cancer treatment was available for her, so at each visit he would listen to how her week went, adjust her pain medications, and treat any other complaints she had as best he could. On this Monday, as always, he made adjustments in her palliative regime, and then, thinking of the weekend, he decided to take a few moments to reflect and see what his intuition had to say about her. Much to his surprise, his intuition suggested that what would be most helpful to Mrs. Gonzalez now would be for them to pray together. He was not a praying man, and he began to sweat. Professionally, this felt risky to him. He reviewed the danger checklist from the workshop in his mind. Was there some reason not to do this? Would following his intuitive insight cause anyone harm? Would it delay or negate some needed treatment? Would it embarrass or humiliate anyone? Going down the list, he could not find a good reason to discard his insight, though there it was. So Frank turned to this ill, grandmotherly patient and said, "Mrs. Gonzalez, perhaps it might be good if we prayed together." She looked at him and began to cry. Fortunately, he didn't do what I had been trained to do years ago when a patient cried. He didn't call a nurse. He did what he had learned to do in another of the training workshops. Taking her hand, he simply received her emotions respectfully and waited. Still holding his hand, she said, "That would be very wonderful, doctor." Then she told him that she was a Catholic and asked him if they could kneel down. Shaken, he looked toward the door. It was closed. He was on highly unfamiliar ground, but he was in it already, and he decided to continue. "Certainly," he replied. So in his white coat, he helped her to kneel down, and he knelt down with her in the tiny examining room. She began to pray, first in Spanish and then in English. He had not prayed for many years, but a calm settled over him, and his memory, awakened by the sound of her voice, gave him back a prayer from his childhood. When she had finished, he said it aloud. There was a long, comfortable silence. Then very gently, the old woman reached across and touched his cheek. First in Spanish and then in English, she asked God to bless him and strengthen him in doing his important work. He says he can still feel the touch of her hand even 6 months later. He remembers it when things get tough, and it helps him. He often prays with his patients now, both for them and for himself. One of the reasons that many physicians feel drained by their work is that they do not know how to make an opening to receive anything from their patients. The way we were trained, receiving is considered unprofessional. The way most of us were raised, receiving is considered a weakness. And I think, well, I know Dogen said, what did he say? When we try and teach others, we are deluded. But when all things teach us, we are enlightened. So we can learn from anything and everyone. And what does this story teach us? That we're not alone. Anything that helps us to renew our faith and keep on going is a gift. And we get these gifts all the time, you know, if we're open to it. If we're not so stuck on our suffering. I was sitting in there waiting to give the talk, and I thought, you know, I'm not going to the firing squad. I'm just... And I was reminded of the book, Don't Take Your Life Personally. And I thought, I'll just make an offering. I just want to talk about the founder's vow and how we can help each other and how we can renew our faith and how we can keep on going. Because as we know, the training isn't easy. And Koho Zenji passed on the teaching to Reverend Master Jiyu. She passed it on to us. And we in turn are passing on our training, our perseverance, our picking ourselves up after falling down. And today is a day of gratitude, one in which we can renew our faith. Now, I recently came back from Thrasel after I was gone for a month, and I had a very difficult trip back because I ate chili, and it had about every ingredient in it that I shouldn't eat, but it was the only vegetarian meal on the plane, so I ate it, and I got really sick, and I actually then picked up a virus and was sick for about 2 weeks, and I just didn't have the energy to go to 5 o'clock meditation. And then some of the other meditation periods that week, for some reason, I didn't end up going. And I really noticed a difference in not meditating every day. And so I wanted to say, don't underestimate the power of regular meditation. I know sometimes when we have difficulties, we think, I really don't want to meditate today, or I'm just really too tired, or it doesn't really help. But I really noticed a difference. I was talking to someone about being depressed. And I think part of it was, I just wasn't feeling well. But part of it was I hadn't meditated. And it really makes a difference to me, even just one day. But if you just let that keep on going and sliding, you may notice a real difference. So I want to encourage people to really keep up that daily meditation, because that's what really helps us. And sometimes if we're suffering, we really don't want to look at it, perhaps, and we don't want to meditate. But it's the meditation that actually helps us. And it helps us to work through that suffering, because in one sense, the suffering is not a problem. We had a 3-day meditation retreat here recently, and on the first day I was just, I was going to everything and I was meditating. And then on the second day, I was feeling much more positive from all the meditation I had done. And then on the third day, all this stuff was coming up, this grief and this frustration and anger, which tends to arise for me a lot. And normally I would have thought, oh, I'm doing something wrong because all this stuff is arising. But I realized that no, this is the third day of a retreat, and this stuff is arising, and it's good that it's arising, and I can just be with it. Just a willingness to be with it, to let it come and to let it go, and to see that this is not all there is. This is not the true reality. Another thing I've been finding helpful over the last while is to just say yes. To say yes to what is good to do. I'm asked to give a Dharma talk. If it were in 3 months, I'd say yes easily, because, that's far enough away that I don't have to think about it. Okay, can you do a Dharma talk in 2 weeks? Yes, I'll do it. Can you do spiritual direction? Oh my God, that's the hardest thing. Okay, Yes, I'll do it. And so I'm finding that just saying yes to what is truly good to do is really important and can help us get through the fears that we have of what might help happen. And also it helps us to have faith, in the Buddha nature, to just turn towards that and to trust in that more than the fears. When I used to play the organ, we'd have, we'd have the eve of the festival of the Buddha's enlightenment and the eve of Vaisak, and you'd have like 9 invocations, and I would have to play them. And sometimes I always got incredibly nervous, and I'd look down at the organ and I'd think, I don't know where to put my hands, you know. I don't know where the notes are. And a mantra I had, I was trust in the eternal instead of my fears. And that got me through it. And I just had to trust, and there my hands went, and they did it, and they played. And another thing that came up was it's okay to make a mistake. And then I could play. And then when I made a mistake, it was great because I'd already made the mistake. And then I could just continue playing knowing that I hadn't died because I... nobody had died because I made a mistake. So so trusting in the unborn, that's so important. I will trust in the unborn and not in my fears. I will take that next step. I will trust in it. I will trust in the unknown. But sometimes it's harder to say yes. You know, these big things I know I have to say yes for. But what about when I'm exhausted and someone asks me to do something and I just want to go to my room and be alone? That's when it's a little harder, and I have that's what I'm working on. Saying yes to those things. And sometimes we have to say no. We are really exhausted and we can't do something, and sometimes it's good to say no. But I try and say yes now and just see what happens and just trust and keep on going. The last thing I wrote here was the vow to train to answer the call is to just do what is in front of us right now, to be present with whatever is going on, to let go of the self. And I think that's all. I think that's your talk for today.
Thank you.
And thank you.